You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
The NBA signature event is less than 48 hours away, and for yet another year, the Houston Rockets are not a part of it. With that somber reality as the backdrop, welcome in to another episode here at Locked On Rockets, your podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. Today's show is again sponsored by our friends over at Gallery Furniture, where their incredible Memorial Day Super Sale has now been extended. Visit any of the three Houston area Gallery Furniture locations or go to galleryfurniture.com to take advantage of the specials. As we chat late this Tuesday evening, the NBA Finals, as mentioned, are less than 48 hours away, opening up Thursday night in Toronto between the Raptors and the now five-time defending Western Conference champion Golden State Warriors. That's the gold standard that the Rockets and the rest of the NBA are trying to catch up to. So I discussed the series a little bit yesterday. That was our first show since the Raptors closed out the Bucks on Saturday in Game 6 with some thoughts about why I see the Raptors winning as an advantageous scenario for the Rockets. But upon further reflection, look, this is the NBA's signature event. It is something to watch. It's the last real basketball we'll get for several months until training camp begins in September, preseason in early October, and then, of course, the start to the 2019-2020 regular season in mid-October. So this is the last time we'll have truly competitive basketball for a while. Let's enjoy it. And before the series starts, I want to take the opportunity here at Locked On Rockets to break down all of the storylines, the narratives, what they all mean for the Rockets, and what you should watch for as a Rockets fan, and what various potential results could mean for your local team here in Houston. So in today's show, I'm going to break it into three parts. First and foremost, why you would want Toronto to win, what the positives are there. In the second segment, why you might want Golden State to win, as crazy as that might sound. And then in the third segment, a look at the particular X's and O's matchup that I think could be most telling as it pertains to the Rockets. As far as who you should be wanting to win going into this series, I'm on record as saying that I prefer the Raptors winning for a number of reasons. And here off the top, I'm going to elaborate a little bit more on why that's the case. First and foremost, I think there's the free agency angle. Because with the Rockets capped out and in luxury tax territory, they don't have any draft picks, it's going to be hard, not impossible, but difficult for the Rockets to radically transform their talent base themselves. Now, we know Daryl Morey's creative, they'll be active on the trade market, but in terms of radical, transformative moves, if anything shakes up the balance of power around the NBA to give the Rockets a better shot at winning a title in 2020, it's probably going to be something that happens elsewhere. And the two biggest names on the free agent market this summer, and they both conceivably could leave, are Kevin Durant and Kawhi Leonard. And I've said in the past, Kevin Durant leaving Golden State is the single most reasonable variable that could improve the Rockets' championship chances a year from now. Even though the Warriors have succeeded thus far in this postseason, including a game and a quarter against the Rockets without KD, succeeding over 82 games when Steph Curry is going to be turning 32, Andre Iguodala 36, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green entering their 30s, and that's assuming they can retain Klay Thompson, who is also a free agent, that is much more difficult to do replacing KD over 82 games than it is in the small sample size of the playoffs when everyone's on peak adrenaline all the time, and there's no back-to-backs, there's time off in between games, they have 9 days off, the Warriors have, after sweeping the Blazers in the Western Conference Finals and now not playing again until Thursday's Game 1 of the NBA Finals in Toronto. So just because they can mitigate the impacts of losing KD now, it doesn't mean that that would be the case a year from now. And as I have said for the last couple of weeks, I think it's much easier for Durant and Kawhi Leonard, who, by the way, has been linked to a lot of other Western Conference teams, the Lakers, the Clippers, because he's got LA roots. It's much easier for these stars to leave if their team doesn't win at all. So in the case of the Warriors, if they lose, then it does make it easier. I've heard that Durant a year ago considered leaving the Warriors if they had lost to the Rockets. But ultimately, after winning their second consecutive title and Durant being finals MVP, the parade in Oakland, that's a tough thing to walk away from. So he stuck around. If the Warriors lose, that makes it all the easier, even though the consensus, the logic used by most of the pundits seems to be that Durant's gone regardless. At the same time, if Durant gets to play hero, returning at some point in the finals and delivering a third straight championship to the Bay, well, it might be difficult for him to walk away. The flip side is that if Kawhi is the star and somehow beats the Warriors, this juggernaut that's won the last two titles, three of the last four, the biggest modern dynasty of the NBA this century, then it makes it really hard for him to leave Toronto, in my opinion. So keeping Kawhi Leonard out of the Western Conference and getting KD out of Golden State, both of those goals come much closer to reality if Toronto wins this series. So to me, that at the top of the list is why you would cheer for the Raptors in this series. Beyond that, the league is just more compelling if the Warriors lose. And I'm sure some of you will say, how much does that mean? But I do think beyond just it being more fun to watch, there is a potential trickle-down effect that could work to the Rockets' benefit if players around the league and the agents see the Warriors as more beatable. Because the last few years, if you look at it, the amount of guys who have truly taken pay cuts, for example, Boogie this year with the Warriors, it's been either to go to Golden State or to follow LeBron. Other than those two teams, there hasn't really been the consensus belief, in my opinion, on the market that another team can win a title. So for the Rockets, a team that is capped out, a team that after last summer, I think we feel pretty confident they're going to spend their mid-level exception, be it on Austin Rivers or someone else. Well, if you're the Rockets with limited tools at your disposal, what you want is for that mid-level exception, for the minimums that you give out. You want teams to see you as a real contender so that, or players, I should say, so that they will potentially take less money given your constraints to play for you because they truly believe that you can win a title. The last few years, the Rockets have made some nice runs, but when you look at the money, the only situations in which players have clearly given up money for have been the Warriors and wherever LeBron is. If a team like Toronto proves capable of knocking them off their throne and then KD leaves Golden State after the season, it's my belief that you could see on the market a transformative effect in which you see not just one or two teams, but maybe four or five that players and their agents around the league see as potential championship winners. And at that point, you might have more of them willing to bypass some of their immediate payday for the chance to contend for a title. So that's why just saying that the league is more compelling, that's not enough, because at the end of the day, what does that really mean? We're just fans. But I do think there's potentially another angle at which that benefits the Rockets, which is that if players and agents around the league all of a sudden believe that more than one or two teams is capable of winning a title, then if we expand that pool to four or five, clearly the Rockets are amongst the top four or five, and that might benefit them when it comes to their pitch on the market this summer. To me, those are the far and away biggest reasons why, from a competitive advantage standpoint, that I think Rockets fans would have an interest in Toronto winning this series. Those are what resonate most with me. However, there actually are a couple of scenarios, little things that would benefit the Rockets if Golden State wins the series. I'll tell you about those momentarily, but for now I want to tell you about our friends over at Gallery Furniture and their incredible Memorial Day Super Sale, which has now been officially extended. You can visit any convenient Houston area Gallery Furniture location today at 6006 North Freeway, 7227 West Grand Parkway South, or 2411 Post Oak Boulevard to shop the largest ever inventory of solid wood Amish-made furniture in Gallery Furniture history. Plus, you can enjoy amazing deals on name brand mattresses, including Sealy, stunning bedroom style starting at $599, beautifully upholstered sofas priced as low as $399, entire dining sets from as low as $599, and so much more. Gallery Furniture is receiving new shipments of quality furniture after Memorial Day weekend, and you can enjoy the amazing Memorial Day savings on these brand new items too. Gallery Furniture is proud to now serve a wider range of Houstonians with low prices on quality furniture for every room in your cherished home. Shop Gallery Furniture's extended Memorial Day Super Sale savings today and enjoy your new quality furniture purchases in your home within 3 to 4 hours when you choose same-day delivery. You can also check them out at galleryfurniture.com. All right, jumping back into the program, this is Locked On Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. Today's show on Tuesday evening, we're doing an NBA Finals preview. Warriors and Raptors beginning Thursday night in Toronto. What are the storylines, the implications for the Rockets? In the first segment, I looked at Toronto winning the NBA Finals, what the storylines are there for the Rockets. Here in segment two, I want to look at what happens if the Warriors win and what that means for the Rockets. And of course, that's probably the likely scenario given that in the last 5 years, they've only lost one postseason series. So at this point, especially with the Rockets having lost to them in four of those 5 years, I think a lot of us are going to have to see to believe a team that beats Golden State four times out of seven. So if the Warriors win, the one positive for the Rockets, and I don't think it's insignificant, is that it gives them complete defense against the narratives. The things that are out there on social media, the talk shows. Folks, it is silly to go after James Harden, Mike D'Antoni, Chris Paul, whatever villain you want to choose in terms of those that seem to have an axe to grind with Houston. You can't really call those guys chokers or call them out for not doing something that no one else has been able to do. When you look at this Golden State run, it would be pretty powerful if the Rockets taking them 7 in 2018 and 6 games in 2019 is the closest that they have come in either season. Now, I know the Clippers technically came within 6 games this year, but I think we all know that had a lot to do with boredom in round 1. You just look at the margins, no game decided by more than 6 points in round 2. That was a street fight. That was a grind, even for the Warriors and by their standards. The Rockets have clearly pushed them the best the last 2 years. And at some point, if they continue to do the same things to everyone else, I don't care who you are, I don't care what your bias is, you have to tip your hat to Golden State and realize that at some point it becomes silly to think it's about what the Rockets aren't doing when Golden State does the same thing to everyone. That's the positive to me, that if Golden State wins this series, it's hard to really throw an insult at the Rockets. And while most of these guys don't matter, perception-wise, sure, there could be a trickle-down effect to some of these things and the narratives that are out there with regards to potential free agents and as the league heads towards the draft and free agency in a month or so from now. So if you're worried about those things being pervasive in terms of the mindset of agents and players on the market, then maybe Golden State is the better scenario. Because if they win this series, I don't know what you can criticize the Rockets for. Now, that's not to absolve them of everything. Certainly they had opportunities that they didn't take advantage of. But if every other team in the league is going through the same issues and most of them worse, look at Portland getting swept, not even winning a game despite playing an entire series against the Warriors without Kevin Durant, then it's pretty silly to hold the Rockets under a completely different microscope relative to the rest of the league. At some point, you would just have to acknowledge in this scenario that the Warriors are just incredibly, historically good, which they are. Now, how good? Of course, we'll see a lot after this series because the Raptors are a very good team in their own right. And for the first time in this 5-year period, the Warriors are going to enter a series in which they don't have home court advantage. And that's something that I think might mitigate the takeaways a little bit, because if Toronto wins, you know, the flip side to it is that if the Raptors win, and this is the one thing you could be worried about, some people might say, well, why couldn't the Rockets do what the Raptors did? And why couldn't James Harden do what Kawhi Leonard did? And I'm not saying that there's no truth should that happen, but there would be at least a little bit of a pushback from the standpoint of, hey, the Raptors had home court advantage, the Rockets didn't. A lot of people involved with Houston, D'Antoni, Harden have cited that since the series ended, so clearly they see it as significant as well. It's not the be-all, end-all, but it's something that they should have controlled and didn't. Anyway, to get back to the point, as far as if the Warriors win this series, it just becomes really silly to pin Houston down on not doing something that no one else has proven able to do. And in this case, the Warriors, everyone is amazed by Kawhi Leonard right now. This is a top 5 player in the world, two-way, he can dominate on both ends. They've got home court advantage. If they don't win this series, even with home court advantage, with Kawhi playing the way he is, with Kevin Durant not ready to go from the start of the series, we'll see if he's cleared at some point during it, then at some point it just becomes silly to continually make these Warriors-Rockets series and our takeaways about what the Rockets didn't do. If even teams that have these huge advantages like the Raptors do in terms of Kawhi being relatively healthy, home court advantage, if that's still not enough to beat the Warriors, then how well does that speak of the Rockets, a team that has challenged the Warriors for two consecutive years? So to me, that's why you might feel compelled and see some benefits to cheering for Golden State. The reason I see the Toronto scenario as a little bit preferable, when I say the Toronto scenario, I mean them winning, is that for the most part, I don't think that those narratives are all that pervasive amongst the NBA players themselves. I think there's a lot of respect for James Harden, Mike D'Antoni, this era of the Rockets. We've seen in the player polls, the MVP voting by the players, those types of things. There's a lot of respect from people who actually play the game about the Rockets. So in terms of the narratives that are out there from the Max Kellermans and the Skip Bayless types of the world, I don't think that even though they have a megaphone, that it would actually make that big of an impact. So as far as the Warriors winning, I see the positives from it from the standpoint of arguing with your friends, social media, not having to endure as much abuse from the idiot hot take shows. I understand that. That's valid. However, I just don't think that there's all that much of a true market impact in terms of how players, agents, coaches, etc. The Rockets are trying to lure a couple of coaches as well. We heard Ty Lue is one possibility, although with him being focused on head coaching jobs, it doesn't really seem that likely, but Rockets do have four or five open positions on their staff beneath Mike D'Antoni, so on top of luring players, you may need to lure coaches as well. And I just don't see, even if Toronto wins the series, that being all that negative. So in terms of Golden State winning and snuffing out that talk, that's why, while it helps a little bit and certainly would make social media a more fun place, I just don't know that at the end of the day, it's all that meaningful. Whereas if Toronto wins, the reason I'm tilted towards that side of the fence, besides just the fun, yeah, let's admit this is entertainment. And of course, I think we're all sick of the Warriors by this point, at least if you're listening to Locked On Rockets, I think that's a very highly likely scenario. But beyond that, I think there's just much more of a direct line to the free agencies of Kevin Durant and Kawhi Leonard. And also the idea that if someone beats the Warriors, then sure, there is a very viable reason to think that more NBA players might see that, hey, you don't just have to be with the Warriors or LeBron to have a real chance to win a championship. So in terms of some of those discounts, just like we saw the Warriors get with Boogie Cousins last summer, perhaps the field expands to four or five teams. And if that's the case, Houston would definitely be in that mix with James Harden, not even 30 years old yet. That's why I side with Toronto. It's not that there's no benefits to Golden State winning. I just think, generally speaking, the Raptors winning, it's more fun, and I just think there's more of a direct relationship to things that might play out on the market in the weeks and months to come. Now, besides just who you want to win, there's also the storylines of how will this series actually be determined, and there's one in particular that I see having a direct relationship to some takeaways from this past Rockets-Warriors series and how the Rockets might approach their offseason. I'll tell you that in just a few minutes in the third and final segment of the show. But before we get there, I want to tell you guys about a couple of friends of the program. First, it's our partners over at Himalaya. To get this show every day, you can subscribe to Locked On Rockets on their new podcast app. In this ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlist and new features each and every day. Download Himalaya at your app store and subscribe to Locked On Rockets. And I also want to thank our sponsors and friends over at Untuck It. If you're looking for a great Father's Day gift idea, well, they might have the solution for you. Their shirts are specifically designed to look great untucked and feel comfortable at work or on the weekends. There's no tucking or tailoring required. Just go to untuckit.com and use the promo code NBA to get 20% off. All right, finishing up our NBA Finals preview show on this Tuesday night. I'm Ben Dubose. This is Locked On Rockets. We spent the first couple of segments looking at the pros and cons of Toronto winning, of Golden State winning. My personal belief is that it's better for the Rockets if the Raptors do, but it's not that there are no positives if the Warriors win, and ultimately, if you see the Golden State scenario as preferable, well, I disagree. It's not an indefensible argument by any means, so I thought there was some good discussion there as far as what to watch for, and depending on which team executes the best, what the implications are for the Rockets in the weeks ahead. Here in the third and final segment, I'm going to look at what I see as the key X's and O's storyline that I think should really tell the Rockets something by comparing their performance to Toronto. And though I think nationally there's going to be a lot of takes about James Harden versus Kawhi Leonard, because nationally there's a lot of oversimplification, making games out to be a battle of stars, In reality, I think those of us in Houston know that James Harden was very, very good against the Warriors. What I see as the main problem for the Rockets, when you look at the team they were supposed to be going into the series, and then what actually happened on the floor, it's their third highest paid player, that $17 million center, Clint Capella, who just did not perform in the series against the Warriors at anywhere near the third highest paid level. It's pretty simple when you go to expected results to actual results where the lag was. And again, the Rockets, they lost 4-2. No game was decided by more than 6 points. It wasn't like they had a poor series. They were close. They were right there. So Clint Capella not being able to execute, it's a big storyline. So when you look at the Raptors, what's interesting, of course, they have a couple of traditional bigs, Marc Gasol, Serge Ibaka. They also have Pascal Siakam. And to me, it's the mix of their bodies up front. First, how much can they play big? How much can Marc Gasol and Serge Ibaka stay out there? And if they can, then how much of it is because they have three-point range, which obviously Clint Capella does not? If that's the case, then you may see the Rockets, well, first and foremost, you'll look and see how much is the three-point shot, how much is their toughness around the rim. It depends on exactly how the game plays out. But to me, because the Raptors have these three bigs with lots of different styles, what wins out? Does the Draymond at the five lineup ultimately neutralize all of them? Or are there groupings where there's success? For example, if they space the Warriors out a little bit, does that not make you a little bit more confident in terms of Isaiah Hartenstein, his continued development, a guy who does have a three-point shot and can be a so-called stretch five? If Marc Gasol finishes near the rim, does it tell you that Clint Capella isn't as unplayable as we thought? That a lot of the issues may have been either in his head, maybe it traces back to the virus that we know he suffered, the respiratory issues and the Utah series, maybe that played a role. If Gasol or Ibaka plays well with Draymond at the five, and I'm not necessarily saying I expect that to be the case, then I think that tells us something about Capella and Hartenstein, the traditional fives on the Rockets, and whether that's a viable path moving forward, especially because the Warriors without Durant are going to be even more heavily reliant on Draymond Green as far as being a focal point for them on both ends of the floor than what they've been with Kevin Durant the last couple of years. So the more traditional bigs, how do they fare? And if they do succeed, is it because of the three-point shot? Maybe that impacts how you view the market, or is it because of something else, them just going out and executing at a higher level? If the Raptors have to go smaller, which I suspect, and you have a bit more of a playmaker at the five in Siakam, what are the implications of that for the Rockets? If that's what ends up happening, to me, it's really fascinating. And I'm not going to say at that point it's an easy decision to move on from Clint Capella, but it at least has to make you think. Now, the reason it's not an easy decision, even if that does turn out to be the most viable solution for the Raptors or any team in their shoes against the Warriors, well, look, Capella is a big part of how you have this matchup advantage against the Nuggets, how he's been viable against Rudy Gobert. So you can be too focused on the Warriors to where you let your advantages against the rest of the league and over the 82-game grind dissipate, and that's not a good scenario either. So you have to be very careful if you're the Rockets that you don't overcompensate. That said, if you find out that this is clearly the way to go, that Marc Gasol, Serge Ibaka, two guys that shouldn't be mentally rattled, that are big, they're bulky, they've got experience, if just like Capella, they are rendered unplayable, and then the Raptors have more success with a playmaker at the five spot, does that not make Clint Capella at least a little bit less valuable when you think that maybe there's nothing that you can do with his skill set that against the Warriors you're ultimately forced to go somewhere else? It ties into some of the paths the Rockets may go down in free agency. For example, we've mentioned the Jimmy Butler opt-in and trade scenario a few times before. Well, to get Jimmy Butler here, even if he opts in to a lower salary figure, you'd have to send either Eric Gordon or Clint Capella out. There's no way to make the math work without it. And also, Philadelphia, just from an asset standpoint, they'd rather Butler walk for nothing than get back bad contracts, even if that were possible. For the Rockets to make the math work and for Philadelphia for it to be worth their while, you'd have to give them something, or perhaps you involve a third team, because I don't know if Capella would want to be a backup behind Embiid. I understand that. Point is, to make it work for both teams, you would have to send out talent. And Butler's just one example, but just as I ran with a Kevin Love hypothetical in yesterday's show, let's run with a Jimmy Butler hypothetical in today's. To make this work, if you're the Rockets, you would have to give up Capella or Gordon to get any sort of significant upgrade. If a team without a traditional five shows you that they are able to have that level of success against the Warriors, and beyond just showing you that they can, they might be showing you that it's the only reasonable route to do so, because certainly the Raptors have invested a lot in Gasol in particular, then maybe it does make you a bit more willing to, say, use Capella for a chip like Jimmy Butler, be a little bit smaller, and effectively look at your five as a placeholder. I've seen a lot of interesting discussions lately on the national scale about just how relevant a traditional center may be in this current era, where so much is dependent on the three-point shot, where there's so much switching, there's so much athleticism, flexibility, those are the buzzwords. How much do you need a traditional rim protector and a presence near the rim, and how much do you need the ability to play in space, to stretch the floor? And I'm not saying, again, that the Rockets would go 82 games starting P.J. Tucker at the five, but who knows, maybe you want your center to be a bit more of a placeholder. Isaiah Hartenstein, try and sign DeAndre Jordan for cheap, something like that to get you through the regular season, and then lean a bit more in the playoffs on lineups with P.J. Tucker at the five, and then beyond that, you could play four perimeter creators, Harden, Paul, Gordon, and in this hypothetical, Butler, or whoever it may be. That, to me, is a consideration that, if you had asked me a few months ago, I would have said no way. To be that small and to be that heavily dependent on the perimeter, you would always send out Gordon before Capella. And Gordon's 30, while Capella is 25, so there's that to consider as well. But if this league is trending in such a direction to where centers are becoming, unplayable is too strong of a word, but less important on the biggest stage, then I don't know how, if you're the Rockets, it can't factor in to your analysis of just how viable and important Clint Capella is in the grand scheme. And the reason it's a big deal heading into the summer is that if the Rockets are going to make any sort of splash acquisition, be it free agency, trade, and of course it'd always be about trade, but it could be a free agent that leverages his way into a trade and the team wants to get something rather than watch them walk for nothing. If the Rockets are going to get an upgrade of any significance, it's going to have to be either Capella or Gordon going out, because that's the only way to make the salaries work, and it's the only assets that the Rockets really have to make it worth the other team's while. So if Toronto finds their bigs unplayable, yet also finds success, because if Toronto's just overmatched, then you can't really take anything out of the series. It's pretty simple. If Toronto ends up losing in four or five games, then ultimately I don't really know what you can learn. But if they win the series, it's how they win the series that's important. Is it the traditional bigs? If that's the case, then while frustrating, you can go back to the drawing board with Clint Capella and hopefully get him in better physical and mental condition entering next postseason. Or if it's with a smaller, more agile lineup, then that might have something to do with your team philosophy and how you construct this roster moving forward. Again, that's if Toronto is competitive, either winning or taking it six or seven games. If the Warriors win it in four or five, then I don't really know what the takeaways are other than the Warriors are just that damn good and you need to build your roster, continue building as best you can, and there's probably not a lot to take from the series in that scenario, because in that case, the Warriors would just be clearly better than the Raptors, and for that matter, the Rockets would also be clearly better than the Raptors if the series ends in four or five games with Toronto having home court. The last storyline that I want to get to, not because I think it's something that you should take away, but because I think it's going to be something that's overblown, is the role of Nick Nurse. And specifically, the coaching change the Raptors made a year ago, going from Dwayne Casey to Nick Nurse. I'm sure there are some that are going to try and draw parallels between that and Houston's current situation with Mike D'Antoni. I've mentioned it as a possibility, in that sometimes franchises get to a weird point where you just can't get over the hump, it feels like, and you want to change for the sake of change just because you want a new voice. While I'm not saying that Nick Nurse deserves no credit, what I will say is that the Raptors' success, it's very difficult to attribute what is a result of the coaching change, because they then got a top five player before the season started in Kawhi Leonard. When you look at the 2018 Raptors in the playoffs to the 2019, the biggest difference, you've replaced DeMar DeRozan's minutes with Kawhi Leonard. That's a huge, enormous gap. So I'm sure some, if the Raptors win this series, we'll try and point to the coaching switch and say, hey, this is why you need new input. I'm not saying that those people are wrong. I'm just saying that that's very, very difficult to prove. It's speculative. And in my opinion, that's why I see that angle being overplayed if the Raptors ultimately compete and possibly win this series. Not saying that Nurse deserves no credit, but in terms of what it means for the Rockets and other teams that are kind of where Toronto was a year ago, I don't think you could ignore the Kawhi Leonard part of the equation, because that's first and foremost the story of the Toronto Raptors. They acquired a top five player who's gotten healthy again, and they gave up a guy in DeMar DeRozan who is nowhere near that level. So when you look at the Raptors' story, how they've gotten over the hump in the East, and if they ultimately compete and even beat the Warriors in a series, I would not look too in-depth at the coaching. Now, specific matchups in terms of how they play, sure, but in terms of the storylines of, oh, the Raptors made a change and this is what they get, I think that's a pretty big assumption, because the biggest change for the Raptors, it's about the personnel. Kawhi Leonard is just way, way better than DeMar DeRozan, and as a result, they're in the finals starting Thursday night. Anyway, I think that'll do it for our NBA Finals preview show. As always, I appreciate you guys for listening, and if you want more content before our next episode later in the week, there are, of course, very many ways that you can get that. First and foremost is Twitter, where I'm on there at Ben Dubose, and the show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Beyond that, we've also got a website at LockedOnRockets.com, a Facebook account at Facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, an email address, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. All of those are ways you can access prior episodes, or you can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, those types of things. Or you can even inquire about how to become a potential advertiser and sponsor of our rapidly growing program, just as our friends at Gallery Furniture were again today. Remember, the incredible Memorial Day Super Sale over at Gallery Furniture has now been officially extended. Visit any Houston area Gallery Furniture location or go to galleryfurniture.com to take advantage of the many specials. And beyond listening and supporting our sponsors, please remember that you can help this show grow by subscribing on the new Himalaya Podcast app, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. Leave 5-star reviews if you can. And when you get in your car, you can even tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Rockets, and then you can get our most recent episodes through your listening assistant as well. Once again, thanks to all of you for listening, and please come back soon for more episodes right here at Locked On Rockets, your podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.